Welcome to the Naughty Child Podcast with me, Richard.
And me, Polly.
I'm the dad.
And I'm the daughter.
Getting called out in the middle of the night to go carve a cow, to do a cesarean.
It's the closest thing to farming you can do in the middle of Bristol.
And then mum put on YouTube and then now it's there for the world to see, so it's great.
England were very chirpy.
And I think I only cried like 4 times, but they just happened to get all 4 times on camera, okay?
Locked myself in a procedure room.
Whether it shows something about me or whether it just shows I'm a little bit stupid.
I love people and I love cricket.
Suddenly I'm out on a helicopter because I can go on a glacier.
It's been the longest year ever, hasn't it?
My dog is now called Jimmy Anderson.
So I learned the anthem because I really genuinely thought they would make us sing it.
Polly, you've had a busy day today.
I've had a very busy day. To be fair, it's one of the good days where you get to spend your entire day at Emirates Old Trafford, not getting sunburnt or freezing, because I think actually both of them would have happened to me if I was in the stands. But I was on commentary for Lancashire Thunder against the Sunrisers, which, do you know what, it ended up being a pretty naff game. Thunder played really, really well, and we'll get into it later. But yeah, today was a weird one for fixtures. I feel like at the weekend, everything seemed a little bit more normal.
Well, the pattern's been similar, actually, hasn't it? So on the weekend, there were three games in which were very, very easy wins and one close game. And then it was similar today, wasn't it? That there were three games which are kind of foregone conclusions, and one of them within the first half an hour. And then one game that went right down to the last over.
Yeah, we'll quickly run through the results on the opening weekend. So you were at Edgbaston for Central Sparks versus the Blaze, where...
Oh, it was cold.
Do you know, it looked really sunny and I was getting a bit of FOMO, and then you were like, no, it's freezing. I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. I don't mind being indoors. And the Sparks won that by 87 runs. The Diamonds hosted the Thunder and they won by 9 wickets at Chesterley Street. Southeast Stars and Southern Vipers, that was the close game. Southeast Stars winning by 4 wickets in the end. And then Western Storm v Sunrisers. Sunrisers won by 8 wickets and Western Storm were all out for 114, which was not ideal for them. But there were some...
Did you say Western Storm beat Sunrisers? Sunrisers beat Western Storm?
Yeah, I said Sunrisers beat Western Storm.
Did you?
Well, I've got a memory like a goldfish, and maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But no, I'm sure I said Sunrisers won.
Sorry, I was only half listening.
It's not the time to wind me up, thank you. In terms of individual performances, Sparks, Abby Freeborn got 53 from 87. Hannah Baker got 3 for 29. Nadine de Klerk, 43 with the bat. Grace Ballinger, 3 for 47. Lauren Winfield-Hill and Holly Armitage, they've had really good starts to the season. We'll talk about them a little bit later because of today's game, but Holly Armitage scored 61 out. Katie Levick, who I tipped as the top wicket taker, she took 4 for 38. So thank you, Katie Levick, for starting well. Freya Kemp, I want to chat about Freya Kemp and Tash Farron, actually, because I feel like similar things have happened.
Yes.
So Freya Kemp scored 50 in the opening game. Tash Farron opened the batting and scored 94 off 97 balls. Now, they've both had back injuries, and primarily they're bowlers. But, you know, they've had to kind of focus on their batting because bowling has been off the cards. And particularly Tash Farron, to go from being in number 11 to opening the batting is just... incredible.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? It's absolutely extraordinary. And all I can think of is that the last 18 months that she's been injured, she must have just worked constantly on her batting.
Yeah, and we were having this conversation on air with Alex Hartley about, because famously she was a number 11. How often does that happen, that number 11s move up to number one? And I think the only person we could really think of who's kind of gone around the order is Tammy Beaumont, because she's kind of batted everywhere. But in terms of a bowler who is genuinely a number 11, that's kind of always been Tash Farron. And to see her opening the batting and doing it better than most full-time batters is quite some feat. Also in that game, Bryony Smith scored 90 off 99 balls. So she played very well. And just to touch on the Sunrisers, Nick Hancock overseas, obviously, on debut got 3 for 15 and she played very well against the Western Storm. So, yeah, it was kind of interesting after that first round, particularly I think the Southeast Stars beating the Southern Vipers, because that's always going to be a close game and one that could really decide the title.
Yeah, it really good first. I mean, first of all, it was just great to get the season underway, wasn't it? Absolutely amazing. And I just felt amazing to be there at Edgbaston, despite the sub-freezing temperatures. And the thing that struck me at Edgbaston is that it was the bowling for Sparks, which was absolutely brilliant. Really, really, really good. Hannah Baker was excellent, unplayable. They just couldn't get a bat on the ball. She kept beating the outside edge all the time. And then Emily Arlott was just brilliant. Again, her figures were extraordinary, like 5 overs 2 for 7 or something like that, or 7 overs 2 for 5. It was absolutely fantastic. And again, it making the batters look absolutely clueless. So after Sparks got a reasonable, just over 200 on the board, it looked like it was going to be quite a close game. But the Blaze got absolutely nowhere near it. And mainly because of the absolutely excellent bowling by Sparks. I was really impressed.
Well, speaking of the Blaze, they had an absolute disaster today. Well, I say disaster, it was slightly rectified because they went 17 for 5. Which you just think, oh my gosh, what's happening? Then they slipped to 49 for 9. So in my head, I was like, they're not going to get anywhere near 100. They ended up being bowled out for 127, mainly because it was a probably very angry captain, Kirsty Gordon, who went and scored 41 not out to build a partnership with Grace Ballinger. And Hypercourse put a stat, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head now. It was like something about the highest ninth wicket partnership or something like that. But anyway, yeah, I just don't quite know what happened for the Blaze. The Southeast Stars were fantastic, and Rhiannon McDonald Gay got a fifer. But it just, what is going wrong? Because they were the undefeatable team last season. They were the top dogs, and now suddenly they're having a bit of a crisis.
How quickly things change. Yeah, so 126 today from 42 overs. On Saturday, 135 from 41 overs. So just not really scoring any runs at all. It really, really surprising from the Blaze, as you said. So Nadine de Klerk looked really good on Saturday when she was batting and bowling as well. So she looked like she's going to make some really good contributions for them. But yes, you've got so many good batters playing for the Blaze, who are just in these two games have just not performed at all. So Marie Kelly out for a first ball duck today. It didn't really contribute massively on Saturday either. It's you've got to look for your top players, your experienced professionals to step up at this point, haven't you? And get the big runs on the board. And I'm sure those inquiries will be going on now at the Blaze to make sure that this weekend they're going to bat well and they're going to actually score some decent runs, because it must be so demoralising to have two games like that back to back.
Yeah, it must be really frustrating. On to the Southern Vipers against Sparks. Now, this made us laugh because, of course, it was at Wormsley, which is infamously a Sparks home ground, despite being Vipers territory. But this year it was a Vipers home game. And Sparks just, they did quite well to recover, mainly thanks to Katie George. They slipped down quite quickly and it wasn't looking good. But yeah, Katie George and Rhea Fackrell put a couple of runs on the board, but the thing with the Vipers is you can score 172 and that's just never really going to be enough against the Vipers. And Charlie Knott has been a fantastic overseas signing for them, because she took 2 wickets and then went on to score 58 not out. And yeah, Sparks just didn't really know how to deal with her. And I haven't really seen much of the game, but from the scorecard, Vipers were just doing Vipers things.
Yeah, I mean, clinical, wasn't it? And Sparks really, it never got going. As you said, Katie George rescued it. In fact, she batted really well on Saturday as well. So she's had a really solid start to the season. But yeah, you know, if you score under 200 against Vipers, that the likelihood is you are not going to win that game. And so it proved the case.
As mentioned, I was at Thunder against the Sunrisers. Now, this was quite an interesting game because the first innings when Thunder were batting, I was just like, wow, this is a great game. It's really good. It was the highest total that Thunder have ever set in the RHF. It was 292. Katie Mack scored a century and Fee Morris scored 89. It was a 191-run partnership between the pair. So that was really strong because they lost Emma Lam and Saren Smell quite early, which looked concerning. I was like, oh, history's repeating itself. It's going to be a classic Thunder innings of getting bowled out, but quite a low total in the hundreds. But no, they did really, really well. Sophie Eccleston came in and scored a couple, Ellie Threlkeld too. So they just kind of set themselves up really well. And then they really backed it with the ball and their fielding. I thought their fielding was fantastic. There were like minor errors, but, you know, even when they basically sealed the game, they were preventing those boundaries, you know, doing those diving stops and things like that. And I don't know, they looked a bit more of a uniform side than they have done previously. And I mean, they were massively helped by Kate Cross and Sophie Eccleston coming back in, which I can imagine if you're a Sunrisers player, it's probably the most gutting news when you're like, well, a lot of the other England players haven't returned to the regions and suddenly you're put up against the best bowler in the world. And Kate Cross, who's extremely experienced and is Lancashire through and through, and you just think, oh no, what are we doing? So they took 3 wickets apiece. And then Hannah Jones, who's come back from injury last season, she took 2 wickets and was very economical as usual. So just kind of strangled them, really. And they were 150 all out. So the Thunder got the bonus point as well, which, I mean, you know, everyone's been saying about they need to get silverware, and they didn't start their campaign well against the Northern Diamonds. But in terms of their first home game, I don't think it could have gone any better.
And if I were Chris Reid, I'd be really, really happy with that, because clearly he's had to have words early on. You know, it's not the start that he wanted. He's had to, you know, motivate them. Getting Cross and Eccleston in is clearly going to make a massive difference, isn't it? And it did. But I guess that's where the coach really earns his corn, isn't it? When the team loses badly and you've got another game 3 days later, actually turning that round and they're putting in a very, very different performance on the Wednesday compared to the one on the Saturday. So really, I think he'll be really chuffed with that and look to keep that momentum going.
Did you just hear that massive, like, bleep? Someone just held their car horn down. Oh, yeah, because the microphone. Someone held their car horn down for like 15 seconds. Sorry, what? Do you mind? We're recording a podcast. how dare you? anyway, let's chat a bit about Northern Diamonds against Western Storm. Again, I couldn't really follow the game massively, but Holly Armitage scoring a century, 103. So she's already on 160 runs or something. Yeah, that's only 2 games in.
Yes, in fact, identical to Tash Farrant, who hit 60 odd not out today as well. So both of them have been out once and scored over 150 runs from the first 2 games. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's really impressive. And there was a slight collapse in the middle, but Abby Glenn came in, who we haven't seen tons of actually, but she went and scored 53 not out, which I thought was brilliant. Western Storm weren't bad with the ball, to be fair. Danny Gibson, Amanda Jade Wellington and Soph Smale all got 3 wickets apiece. And yeah, Amanda Jade Wellington, another great overseas signing. It was 3 for 30. And she just, I would never want to face her. Her leggies are just, they just look impossible to play. But yeah, Western Storm did come close to chasing it down. I think the problem was wickets in hand. And that ultimately is... it's kind of why they lost, because they had to go big. They lost by, the Diamonds won by 10 runs in the end. And it was a match of them being bowled out. So
it went to the last over, didn't it? I guess the issue is they needed someone to bat on. So their top scorers were Sophia Smale, friend of the pod, with 35, and extras with 35. Thanks partly to 5 penalty runs that they got awarded. Apparently because Diamonds player moved fielding positions as the bowler was coming into bowl, which you're not allowed to do. So just be careful, everyone. They're on the lookout for such sharp practice going on.
Well, do you know what? The umpires at the Thunder game, they had all sorts of gadgets. Like, everybody's bat, they, like, were observing, was like, does it fit to these measurements? I've never seen that before. Like, obviously, I've seen, you know, like, in a test match or whatever, where they check the ball through the hoop and stuff.
Yeah.
But this was, I was just like, do you think these people are criminals? Like, what is going on?
It's like going through security at the airport.
Yeah. I was a little bit baffled by it. It was, because it was every single player. They walk out, oh, name is Tony, can we check your back? Can we check? And then, yeah, they had all sorts of gadgets. And it was really strange. If any umpires are listening, can you let us know if there are any new regulations or cracking down on procedure? Because there are some cheats in the competition. I don't know. It was a little bit strange. But in terms, I'll just get the table up, actually. So Southeast Stars are at the top. Them on 9 points, and Northern Diamonds. Thunder are in third. The Blazer at the bottom with Western Storm. And then you've got Viper, Sparks and Sunrisers in the middle. So obviously only two games in, but I think also those bonus points, that makes a difference in the long run. And I know Thunder were really keen to get those today and managed to in the end. But this time last week, I said a couple of things. I said, I want to see a century. We've had two of them, I think. Mm-hmm. I said, I didn't want to see any games rained off. We haven't had any games rained off. Now, this weekend, we will probably have games rained off, and there will be Duckworth Lewis put in place because rain is forecasted. But my request was granted, so I'm very happy about that. And another thing that made me extremely happy and just blew my mind a little bit was that our souvenir album, which has been, it's been mentioned across the commentary circuit a little bit, which is great. Someone had printed pages of it out and was getting it signed by some of the Sparks players. So there's a photo on the Sparks Twitter and Instagram of Katie George signing these girls' pages of the souvenir album.
Well, from social media, it's Jamie, friend of the pod. And he and his family were sat just in front of me at Edgbaston with the sticker book. So I saw this, your work, printed out in front of me, which was just, whoa.
So you keep saying it's my work or my sticker, but you did do stuff for it. Like, you have to take some credit.
Well, you know, I don't like to blow my own trumpet. But yeah, it was mainly me, Paul.
Right, okay, we're not going to go that far, please. Right, I'm not standing for that. So it's actually my sticker book. if Panini try and sue us, it's your sticker book.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's mine. speaking of it, though, are we going to say about you've ordered some hard copies?
Yeah, so I found this. Now, I don't know whether this is going to work or not, but on the internet, I found a place that will print them out for us. So I've ordered 10 copies. And they should be arriving by the weekend. So I'll see whether they look any good in a sort of magazine format. And I'm wondering if we could offer these to our listeners, to people who would like to win a copy.
Yeah, we're thinking we could do like a little competition. I mean, I don't know if that... Is that arrogant? Because I was like, I don't think we're like big dogs enough to do like, oh, we're going to do a giveaway. But like also, I don't want to just be like, who wants one? I want people to have to compete, like... I'm not going to make them do like a 100-meter sprint, but also like, I want there to be jeopardy. You know, you're not guaranteed one. You have to be in it.
I mean, it depends how many people enter. I mean, I've ordered 10. We'd like to make people a couple for ourselves. So that means we could give away 8 as prizes. And so if only 5 people enter, doesn't matter. They're all going to get one.
Yeah, but we're going to pretend that 300 people entered. These are up for grabs. But I don't know. We'll see. But if people are interested, let us know, because then we will do like a little giveaway.
We'll just X.
Yeah. Twitter, whatever. But if not, we will stand outside Edgbaston, like giving them out as flyers. Like, anyone, any takers?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? I was wondering whether I should print out a whole load and then just sort of stand on a street corner saying, you know, 100% unofficial magazine, would you like to buy one? But I just think I might get either moved on or arrested.
Well, do you know what? If that happens, it's all for the sake. It will make a great story on the podcast, live from jail.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
You'll have to come and bail me out.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. No, thank you. Anyway, we'll move on from the Rachel Hayer Flint briefly, because the World Cup qualifiers start tomorrow, I believe. So that's Thursday. We've got the teams of Ireland, Netherlands, Scotland, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Zimbabwe, Vanuatu, US, UAE and Uganda. So it's going to make for a really interesting kind of tournament. And two teams go through, I believe.
Yes, so the finalists effectively go through. So the big game really will be the semi-finals.
Semi-final, yeah.
And you know, potentially you could have Scotland and Ireland in the semi-finals, possibly playing each other, possibly in opposite semi-finals, with the possibility of them both going through. We'll see. You'd imagine Sri Lanka will be strong favourites to win their group and win their semi-final. You would imagine, you know, based on how they've done so far, you know, be performing absolutely brilliantly. You'd expect Vanuatu to maybe struggle a little bit. But then the rest, you just don't know. I mean, Zimbabwe on their day can be good. Uganda can be really good on their day as well. UAE are not to be written off as well. And Thailand, of course, have surprised us in the past. So watch this space. It all kicks off tomorrow, Thursday. So we're recording this on Wednesday night. So, and in fact, by the time you listen to the podcast, if you listen to it when it comes out, it will have happened yesterday. So Thursday the 25th, you've got Sri Lanka against Thailand and Ireland against UAE, followed by Scotland against Uganda and Zimbabwe against Vanuatu. So four games a day. Two of the games will happen at the same time each day. I don't know where you can follow it. I don't know if it's on the ICC website or whether a sort of major broadcaster has picked it up. I'd imagine and hope it's on the ICC website. So that'd be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And I would love it if there was at least one new, because I reckon Sri Lanka will go through, but I would love it if there was a new team. Of course, I want Ireland to go through. That's a given. But I just think it would be really interesting. Or just, I really hope there are some like proper good competitive games.
Yeah.
Because I think particularly with the teams that are there, it is slightly unpredictable. I think about Zimbabwe, of course, Ireland have quite a good record over them. But I mean, anything can happen on the day, you never know. And following the warm-up games has been really interesting as well. I know Scotland have done really well. But yeah, cannot wait to follow that. That will be very good. Shall we introduce our podcast guest for this week?
Yes. This was a very interesting interview, wasn't it?
It was very interesting because for the first ever time, we forgot to record. Well, we didn't forget to record. We did remember to record. But at one point we had to pause because the audio went a bit weird for our guest. And I forgot, I paused it because I was like, oh, this will help me when I'm editing. But then I forgot to press play again. And so very graciously, our guest, Katie Jones, was very happy to come straight back on and we re-recorded what we'd already spoken about. So a little bit of GCSE drama going on. But it was absolutely brilliant to chat to Katie. She was really just, she was so lovely. And yeah, not many guests would be very happy to come back on after our error, or my error even.
Yeah, she was fantastic. And it was great to talk about under-19s. It was great to talk about what it's like to live in the most beautiful village in the whole of England. And it was great to hear about how she's progressed into you know, the first team at Western Storm.
To start, what is your cricket story and how did you first get involved with cricket?
It's not a very fun, interesting story. Basically, what happened was I was born in like Wolverhampton Way, but I moved to the middle of nowhere when I was like six. I think there's like one bus that goes out of the village. And so the only thing you can do is play cricket. And I think my parents just wanted a drink up at the club, to be honest. So I just got shoved in there with all the boys. And yeah, that's what happened, really.
Wow. That's a great cricket story. So yeah. it was babysitting, really.
Pretty much. None of my parents play cricket. None of my grandparents. It was literally just like, have you heard of Dumbleton?
We know Dumbleton. Yeah. It's the most beautiful village in the world.
Yeah. But there is nothing there, though. That's the only thing. There's absolutely nothing. But it's an amazing. How small of a place it is, the club there, the setup is unbelievable.
I've actually played cricket at Dumbleton.
Have you?
Yeah, well, and this is the only cricket game I've ever played in my entire adult life.
That's brilliant.
And it was nearly 30 years ago, and I'm not really sure how I ended up playing there. It was one of those things where a bunch of guys saying, we need to take 11 people because we're playing a game at Dumbleton. Didn't even know what it was. And then went there, and it was like this English village out of a postcard. I expected Miss Marple to appear around the corner. It is lovely.
Very, the most
stereotypically beautiful English village you could ever know.
Yeah, very lucky I am.
If it's your everyday, surely then you just like learn to loathe it. Like we all teenagers loathe where they come from.
I think I did when I wanted to see my mates, and there's one bus that takes the OAPs to Tesco. but apart from that, I'm how lucky I am. It's beautiful. I can go wherever I want, really, with walks and stuff. So I'm a bit of an old granny at heart, really, so it's okay.
And I guess from playing club cricket in Dumbleton to going to play for Western Storm and make your debut, how did that all happen? What was your progression through county cricket like?
So obviously I was with the boys at Dumbleton. And then, like, I'm pretty sure just as I was, like, starting to do the county stuff, like, the women's stuff started up, which was really good. And then when I was, I think it was 9, I went for my first trial, 8 or 9. And then, obviously, I've been through the age groups with county stuff. I played my, like, first county women's game when I was, like, 13, 14. And then that all happened. And then I think it was my final year of under-15s is when I got first picked up for the academy. I think I played a few games that season, and then in my first year of under-18s is when I then got into the academy full-time, was in it for 2 years, and then I've obviously decided to make that progression into the senior squad now, which is really good.
Again, you speak as if this is a normal thing that happens to most people. It's absolutely amazing. And last year for you was just an incredible year, wasn't it?
It was.
You made that breakthrough into, well, senior professional cricket. Tell us about how that happened.
The year before, on the final game of the season, I went up to Manchester and I ran the drinks. I think that was, for me, that was like a bit of an eye-opener, and I was like, you know what, I really want to do this. Like, I want to spend the rest of my life, you know, playing the game I love and get paid to do it. It's just incredible. And then obviously over the winter I started training a little bit more, and then I started going to the games, running the drinks more, and then I just finally got my call up. Actually, no, I didn't. I went all the way down to Brighton, and it rained all day. And that was when I was supposed to make my debut. So that was a bit of a bummer, but then obviously got the opportunity again, and I just grabbed it and loved every minute of it, really.
Wow, that was amazing. So what was your actual debut game then? Who was it against?
Oh, gosh. It was again, okay, that was also a bit of a bummer of a debut, actually. It was against the Blaze, and I fielded for 50 overs, and then we batted for 10 and it got rained off. So it's your classic British debut, and that's okay, I'll accept that.
I was going to say, typical rained off game. So I don't even know how many were rained off last season, but it felt like more than most years. It was not a good year for rain. Now, something we wanted to touch on, which obviously is very topical because this morning it was announced about Project Darwin and the Tier 1 counties. Now, of course, you're a Gloucestershire player. How would you feel about playing for Somerset? Because that is going to be the professional side in your region.
Well, I think obviously like it's a change, but every change brings challenges, but it also brings opportunity. So I'm really excited to get going, to be honest. And I think it's the whole reason they've done it is to progress women's cricket and to make it more professional. And I trust that that's going to work. So I think if that's what makes women's cricket bigger and better, then I'll put all my effort into it, really. But obviously, like, I've come from Gloucestershire. I'm proud of the Gloucestershire side of me, but I'm also ready to embrace that Somerset side as well. So yeah, I'm really excited. I think it'll be great for the future, really.
Well, it'll be really interesting, won't it, to see how it all works out, because I guess it's not necessarily a case that Western Storm players will automatically transfer over to Somerset. Mm. There could be a real mix-up. There could be almost like a draft or a transfer window type thing going on, where there's a scramble for the best players and you can like negotiate your own deals and that sort of thing. But it strikes me, in, you know, where you're based in Gloucestershire, you actually live a lot closer to Edgbaston than you do to Taunton.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what happens, but obviously, like, at the end of the day, definitely, and wherever that takes me, it takes me. But it'd be brilliant to play for Somerset, because obviously I want to keep my Western Storm roots, but if that a different part of my career is somewhere else, then that's what happens, and I just put my all into it, really, yeah.
Going into this season, what are the aims, what are the targets?
I mean, obviously, like, everyone's been working really hard over winter, and I think it would be great to see one of us, like one in either format, go to a final state. It'd be really good. And obviously we've had like a discussion about it being like almost our last summer as Western Storm as such. And it'd be brilliant to bring back a trophy from one of those. And we put so much hard work in as a team and really gelled over winter. So I think it'd be really good to see the rewards from all of that work.
And without doubt, the talent is there, isn't it, within the side? So it's just a matter of all those elements coming together and on the day being able to pull out victories where perhaps maybe you just came short last season. Mm-hmm. Now, you're currently doing A-levels, aren't you, Katie? But what I hear is that you had a little break from your A-levels recently.
Tell us about them. Yeah, so I'm doing biology, chemistry and PE. So not the easiest A-levels. So I literally, I think it was January, I went away to Sri Lanka for 2 weeks as well. So school weren't too happy about that. But before I was about to come away, we were speaking to the psychologist and it was just like about how we're going to like plan work and cope with all of that kind of stuff. And she was like, are you going to take any work? I was like, no. And she was like, are you sure about that? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Because the thing is, if I took it all out there, like, A, could lose it. B, I'm not going to do it because there's sun and there's pools. it was quite funny. I was like, you can only go to Sri Lanka once, despite it being my third time in Sri Lanka. You know what it is, getting the balance.
So tell us about, aside from the cricket for a moment, tell us a little about the experience of being out there in Sri Lanka.
It was incredible. It was 100% the best experience of my life. I think, like, obviously there's the cricket side of things, but getting to know a group of 15 girls that are all different, but all quite similar to all playing cricket was amazing. Got to know everyone so well, such a lovely team. And I think it was like Sri Lanka is such a beautiful place. It's so hot. There's beaches, there's the wildlife. We spent like a bit of time in Hambantota, which is a bit more like deserty, which was lovely. And we went on an incredible safari. And then obviously we moved to Gaul, which is a bit more touristy, but also a little bit more built up. So it was really nice to see that kind of culture and that other side of Sri Lanka. It was incredible.
I guess also because even though this squad is kind of building for the 2025 Under-19 World Cup, which we'll talk about, you had some of those older players who were at the previous Under-19 World Cup, and a lot of them have pro contracts and have played in the 100 and things like that. So what was it like to play along these players who were, you know, they're not actually that much older than you, but they've got loads of experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a really interesting dynamic because there's certain people in the team that, haven't played a senior game. There's also other people that fully contracted. So I think it's really interesting, but I think like no one really thinks about when you're playing. It's just all about sharing your experiences and sharing your knowledge. And I think as a team, we did that so well. And obviously there were more experienced players and they really helped to like share their ideas and everyone learned off each other and everyone had things to tell each other. I think it was obviously an interesting dynamic, but it worked really well.
So on the cricket side of things, remind us which games you actually played on the tour.
So I played in the second T20 against Sri Lanka, the fourth T20 against Sri Lanka, and then I played both ODIs, both against Sri Lanka and Australia.
And tell us a little bit about what you picked up from the players you were playing against. Who caught your eye and what did you learn from playing against these new players?
Sri Lanka was really interesting because I think going into it, we were a little bit shocked almost. Like, they were very, very talented squad and very strong. The spinners, like, their ability to, like, nip, like, with the ball, like, the skills they have were incredible. Like, one ball they'd be bowling off spin, one ball they'd be bowling leg spin, and then all the googlies, everything they could do was insane. But I think that was a really interesting challenge, especially out there where it turns a little bit more as well. So trying to overcome that was really interesting. From a batting perspective, they were also really strong. They had, I think, their two openers in the T20s were proper big hitters. And again, it was something we were quite shocked by, but we learned so much from it. And it was, I'm glad we were shocked by it almost. Like, it was a very competitive game. And then moving on to Australia, like, you know what you're going to get with Australia. A bit of pace bowlers, a bit of spinners, and then obviously, like, very technical batters. But either way, it was a brilliant experience. And I think we all learned something out there. So it was really good.
Yeah, fantastic. And of course, at the end of this next season, that's going to be potentially the build-up to the next Under-19 World Cup. What are your hopes and aspirations towards that?
I mean, obviously, it's like an aspiration of mine. Playing in a World Cup would be absolutely incredible. But I'm also very aware that it's almost like it's about a year away and so much can happen in that time. And obviously, I've got to work really hard, but I'm just going to focus on this summer, see what happens. Not put too much pressure on myself about it, and what happens happens at the end of the day. But being able to play in a World Cup or in Malaysia and Thailand would be like an incredible experience. So set my hopes high.
And quickly going back to Western Storm, I know that Western Storm, and it's quite cool actually about that team, that it's mainly homegrown players who have grown up in Wales or the West Country and have come through that system. But you've got Amanda Jade Wellington this year. Have mm-hmm. you had a chance to play with her yet and keep her?
Yeah, so I haven't yet kept her, but we had a warm-up game on Tuesday the other day, and she's certainly a character. She's very funny. But I think bringing like her into the team with such like breadth of experience and being able to deliver both the ball and the bat will be absolutely detrimental for our squad this year, and really important to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good signing, isn't it? Because I guess typically the players that come in are sort of up-and-coming players. You know, I think about some of the others, like Georgia Vole or whatever, sort of on maybe on the cusp of international recognition. But really, Amanda Jade Wellington is kind of one of the top franchise players in the world, really. You know, she's kind of first pick in a lot of those big franchise tournaments, and certainly has made a massive impact in the 100, hasn't she? So that's a real, real coup, I think, for Western Storm.
I think there's also like she can deliver so much on the field, but it's what she also brings off the field, that additional experience, someone a bit like older who can, you know, like keep the team together, but also bring in new ideas. Will be really interesting to see what happens, actually. I'm really excited to see what happens this summer.
Well, congratulations to you for all you've achieved so far with Western Storm, but biggest congratulations for being selected as one of the young stars in Polly's sticker book.
Yeah, I did see that. It was incredible.
To be fair, you picked the young stars, didn't you, Richard?
Did you?
Well, I think you gave me some suggestions.
I gave you a list. I think I gave two players or two or three players from each team and was like, take your pick and write a little biography.
I mean, Katie was top of the list, and then it was trying to shoo some other people in.
I was just like, oh, it's really hard to pick the other regions, but we've got Western Storm.
It was my mum who sent it across to me. She was like, oh my God, have you seen this? I was like, oh, that's cute.
Has she printed it out yet? You're going to get all your teammates to sign it.
I would be surprised, bless her.
Well, thank you so much for coming on again. I can't believe we did that, but it's definitely right. Been recording this time. So
I mean, not many people have been two-time guests. I think we've had Kate Cross and Katie Levick, and now in fact all the Katies.
There you go.
Whoa. That's actually weird. That's a great coincidence.
I will be watching out for you this season and waving to you from the boundary, but all the best to you.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you both.
So, Polly, some more games this weekend. Are you going to be going to watch any games this weekend?
No, I won't. I'm going to be in Amsterdam having a Google because it's King's Day in the Netherlands, and I'm going to go celebrate, not on my own, because that's Imagine I just went to celebrate someone else's national holiday on my own. No, my best friend lives in the Netherlands, so I'm going to go visit her. I'll be keeping one eye on the cricket, but also I've seen there are like orange flares and stuff, and like you get on boats, like you just get on random boats and there are orange flares, and like everyone
wears fashion items.
No, like as in like football flares.
It's pyrotechnics.
Yeah, pyrotechnics. There are just like street parties. It's a free fall. There's no tax on selling things. So like people just go on the street and sell stuff. And I'm here.
That happens all the time in the Netherlands, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably. The famous coffee shop. So I will be back next week, hopefully, as long as I haven't like died in a river. But yeah, I will be keeping an eye across the cricket, and hopefully I'll be able to keep updated on the scores and everything.
Yeah, Callis probably will be getting her big flare out in the middle at the Utilita Bowl in Southampton if she gets a century on King's Day for Northern Diamonds.
Do you know, I hope she does. I really hope she does. That would be absolutely fantastic. That would go down in Rachel Hayhoe Flint history. Not that there's tons of it. But in the meantime, we will be back next week, potentially with a guest. It just depends on life. But in the meantime, you can follow us on our social media. So that is Naughty Child Podcast on Instagram, TikTok, and TikTok is also Naughty Child Podcast. I'm losing my head. And Twitter is OO Child Podcast. And I forgot to mention, I was a lot more articulate on Storylines Podcast. We did a little collaboration with them, speaking all things Project Darwin. So that is available on our Spotify. It's also available on Storylines Spotify, and all the links on social media. You can find it all there. But as we say, we'll be back next week, and enjoy the cricket in the meantime.